Historic 12. We have reached 12 episodes of Dead FM, the monthly DG podcast where we bring you the news of the latest flavor, sketches, and other funny shit we come up with, or things like today where something is so freaking awesome we gotta share it with you. And today I'm gonna talk to you about Kung Fury. And now the news. Pilot season. Well, you can't win them all. This week we canceled the pilot season Kickstarter. The trajectory wasn't good, and ultimately I think we all learned a great deal. You do have to take risks, and you can't be afraid to fail. DG's takeaway though, we have repositioned our focus entirely on The Gamers, The Series, and Demon Hunters Red Tape. Our goal is to make both. We really need to make both. And the stories are too good not to produce. We are still in the process of regrouping and determining the best strategy, trying to learn from mistakes and make better choices. But we still want to produce this soon, so we're not going to wait too long. I just don't want to launch a Kickstarter unless the plan is super clear. Speaking of super clear Kickstarters, the Darkness Rising Blu-ray Kickstarter launches this upcoming Monday. The film was shot in high definition, and it's about time we had an HD version on physical media. It's good to have a new product, and the cost of producing a Blu-ray is quite a bit more than a DVD by a lot. For one, we don't author the Blu-ray ourselves. It's much easier on a DVD. We know how to do it. The advantage, of course, is that we can put so much more on a Blu-ray disc, though, and that's really cool. We're going to be able to put a lot of stuff on there. My hope is that a lot more people will discover this movie, and we can finally repay our investors after more than a decade of waiting. Can you believe it? So May 18th, tell everyone you know, even the people you don't like. I'm hoping for a lot of backers. The goal seems very attainable. Last I checked, we were clocked in at around 17,000, I think, is the initial goal. So the dollars are a huge part of that, but I'm really going to be watching the dollars secondary to the number of backers. I want to see if we can get a lot of backers. We need to defeat obscurity with this one, folks. Waffle. Now, we are planning our first stretch goal already, and it's a doozy. We're hoping to film something that actually connects Darkness Rising, Hands of Fate, and Gamers 1, and sets up Gamers the Series. Huge. Demon Hunters Red Tape. Where does that leave us with that? Well, in full development mode, that's what. Christian Doyle is busy right now writing the rest of Season 1. Ben Dobbins and I just sat down this week and planned out shooting a killer teaser trailer for both Red Tape and Gamers the Series. So yeah, as I said earlier, we are definitely going to be launching a Kickstarter or dueling Kickstarters for both shows. We're still not quite sure on the correct strategy yet. But before we do that, we need the scripts. And then comes budgeting and crewing up so that we can develop those budgets appropriately, figure out who we're going to work with in every aspect. And if we can pull it off, we'll launch those campaigns this summer and get right to work. But we should know a lot more by the next episode of Dead FM. Let's talk about the store. We are closer than ever to getting this thing figured out. Ben Dobbins had a terrific recommendation to check out bigcommerce.com, and we have done just that, and it looks like it's going to work awesome. It's got a lot of modules and plugins that make the experience really seamless, and we're able to offer a lot more. So right now it's a matter of just sitting down and getting that busy work done. The store definitely will be able to be the central place you can buy all of our nerdy crap. We are changing the name of the store, however, but nerdycrap.com will definitely be a redirect. We stumbled upon the perfect branding for the new store, and that will be forthcoming. So I'm excited about that. We'll be able to, the goal is that we're going to have reliable fulfillment, so we don't have to do the work. We'll be listed on Amazon.com and maintain our wholesale distribution with Paizo. So if your local game store isn't carrying our stuff, beat on their table and tell them to order it, damn it, because they have access to it. So other kind of cool features, if you buy a DVD or Blu-ray, you'll be able to get the digital download along with it pretty seamlessly. Really exciting. And of course, merch. I'm still working on various ways to get t-shirts and other great stuff, but there are a lot of great options, and it's going to be a work in progress, but hope to have this launched really soon. We've got a lot to do prior to Gen Con, so we'll see, but would love to have that it's one of the main things that's sort of missing from the puzzle, is a very centralized place, and I think that's going to help our revenue quite a bit. So, talking about stuff to put on the store, however, we have heard you, and I have forgotten and then been reminded about the Minis Kickstarter. I'm eating a lot of crow because I talked about it, I totally forgot about it, and now I'm talking about it again. So fine. We talked about a Kickstarter for just creating minis, and I discussed this even further with a fan or two, and I think it's a brilliant idea. Just having a campaign devoted to making minis from our various films and ideas. So I need to do a little bit of research on doing some sourcing. I would love to maybe get in with Reaper on their Bones line. That seems like a really good idea with the plastic minis. If I could find some kind of source that would work, we'd be able to churn those out pretty affordably and continually offer those. So we'll see. Maybe I can find somebody at Gen Con to help me out. So I think the final thing I want to address is Journey Quest and the Zoe live cast that Ben and I did. We did a live cast about a week ago or last week about Journey Quest Season 3, Gamers 4. We talked about some funding strategies, and you know, upon reflection, I just feel like I stuck my foot in my mouth, as well as other places it doesn't belong. After discussing it with several folks since the live cast last week, you know, I've changed my mind a bit about Journey Quest. And, you know, what that means is this. Essentially, we're staying out of it. And by we, I mean DG. Journey Quest was a Zoe project, and all the conversations, funding strategies, production discussions, and all that, we were never involved with that. As DG, I was trying to support Zoe and provide some advice, but ultimately it is not my call and it's not DG's place. Whatever Zoe and Matt Bansal and Tony Becerra and anyone else who makes its decisions regarding Journey Quest decide, we'll totally support it. We'll be behind it 100%, and because we want to see it. I want to see more Journey Quest, and I think it'll be great. Same goes with Strowlers. We're not in that, but we're going to support it. It's going to be awesome. I want to see it. So for DG, our priorities will remain with the gamers and with Demon Hunters for the time being. So yeah, enough said about that. And that's the news.
What's wrong, Susie Homemaker?
My in-laws are coming for dinner, and I don't have time to cook anything.
Don't you fret, my doltish friend. Just reach for a can of spray ham.
Spray ham?
That's right, spray ham. The salty comfort of ham with the space-age convenience of an aerosol canister.
How does it work?
Just take the can out of your freezer and give the patented pork vaporator a squeeze to excrete a briny, awful foam onto your plate.
How do I heat it up?
No need. Spray ham comes out of the can piping hot.
It smells like a pig dwelling on its mistakes.
Not to worry. That pig's regret has been turned into a can of tasty spray ham.
How can such an abomination exist?
Our top engineers broke into what we thought was an abandoned Soviet nuclear facility. There was one scientist left who begged us to kill him. We told him we'd help him out if he just told us how to work his machines. And presto, Sprayham was born.
How do the scientists get a whole pig into one little lead can?
We take what the farmers won't look at directly to the Soviet machines we've entombed beneath half a mile of Arctic sea ice and use a bit of plutonium to press it all into one of our mildly radioactive canisters of Babel.
And does that make it healthy for you?
Spray ham has 6% more protein than any other industrial solvent.
Oh, my in-laws are here. I hope they like the spray ham. Dinner with the in-laws went great. They were huffing spray ham straight from the can.
I sure hope they didn't let the pork vaporator touch any mucous membranes.
Thanks, spray ham.
You're welcome, Susie. Do not store spray ham within 20 feet of a microwave oven or consecrated ground. Do not consume spray ham if a prayer has been offered before the meal. Women who are pregnant should not directly perceive spray ham by any of the five senses. Do not display weakness to spray ham. Spray ham. Legally, it's food.
Dead FM.
Hey, everybody. Professor Blue Clay here. Back to school you folks on the weirdly true world history that I promise your teachers didn't tell you about. And boy, do I have one hell of a story for you guys today. It's got a little bit of everything. Millionaires, celebrities, Sherpas, whiskey. Ladies and gents, this is the story of the Pung Bausch Hand. Tom Slick was a Texas oil man. Now, if this weren't a true story, that would be some lazy-ass writing, but I swear that's his real name. Slick was way into cryptozoology, the pseudoscience of searching for animals that might not actually exist. More than anything, he wanted to find a Yeti, and he was just about rich enough to make it happen. Everybody's heard of a Yeti, the legendary ape man of the Himalayas. Or maybe you prefer the term Abominable Snowman or Bumble, if you happen to be an animated prospector. Regardless, you've heard of him. The Yeti's a part of the holy trinity of cryptozoology, on par with Bigfoot and Nessie. Sure, any cryptid seeker would be thrilled to spot the Mothman or the Jersey Devil, but Disney never put one of those guys on the top of a roller coaster. So, it's 1957, and Tom Slick goes charging off in the Himalayas to catch himself a Yeti, but he busts up his leg and has the head back home. He hires this guy, Peter Byrne, to continue the expedition without him. Byrne was a bit of a Yeti man in his own right, and happily hikes off to the frozen wilderness to search for the creature. After a few months of wandering around Nepal, listening to Sherpa stories and snapping photos of mystery footprints, Byrne hits the jackpot. In the tiny village of Pung Bausch, he meets a monk who gets real talky when he's drunk. This guy tells him about a pair of sacred relics they keep in their temple, the hand and scalp of an Anastabuddha Yeti. The monk takes Byrne back to the temple, and damned if it wasn't true. The scalp and the hand are set up on a little shrine lit by flickering oil lamps. The hand is clearly very old and mostly bone at this point, with bits of blackened flesh stuck to it in places. Ever the optimist, Byrne asks the lamas if he can just take the hand home with him. He gets shot down pretty hard, but they let him take a bunch of pictures of it. Photos in hand, he heads to London to meet up with Slick. Now, Slick is happier than a supervillain with a space laser. This is the proof that he's spent years searching for. Actual, physical evidence of the Yeti's existence. After a brief celebration in the traditional Texas manner, which, if those of you don't know, is hopping bow-legged Yosemite Sam dance while firing twin pistols into the air, Slick invites Byrne to lunch at the Regent's Park Zoo, where they're joined by Professor William Osmond Hill, a primatologist. Slick tells Byrne he's sending him back to Nepal. He wants that hand. The testimony of a bunch of monks isn't really proof. The hand needs to be studied by scientists to prove that it's not just some random dead guy's hand. Then Osmond Hill dumps some random dead guy's hand on the table. They're proposing a simple swap. The human hand for the Yeti hand. Nobody will even notice, right? Byrne begs to differ. He tells them that there's no friggin' way he can get the whole hand, but he might be able to switch out a finger. So Byrne heads back to Pung Bausch and tracks down his monk friend. This time he's come prepared and watches the monk down a whole bottle of scotch. It's not long after the drunk-as-a-skunk monk is out cold and Byrne's alone with the hand. He pops off a finger, wires on the replacement, and gets the hell out of town. Now he's got the finger, but how the hell is he supposed to get it back to Slick and his scientist buddy in London? Nepal's got some laws about harming Yetis. No joke. and custom agents tend to give the frostbitten adventure types a pretty thorough pat-down. He wires Slick, asking if he's got any ideas, and Slick wires back that he's got a buddy vacation nearby in Calcutta who can help him out. His name's Jimmy Stewart. Yes, that Jimmy Stewart. Good old George Bailey himself. Stewart is apparently all too happy to help a friend smuggle body parts of unknown origin into the UK. In fact, he's got the perfect place to hide this thing. Inside his wife's lingerie case. Ew. And that's exactly what they do. Byrne hoofs it down to India on foot and hands the finger off to Stewart, who tucks that desiccated cryptid digit in with Mrs. Stewart's unmentionables and hops the plane to London to meet up with Osmond Hill. There is a brief scare when the lingerie case doesn't make it to London. But a customs officer delivers it 3 days later with a sincere apology and the assurance that a British customs official would never paw through a lady's undergarments. True to their word, the finger's still there. Osmond takes the appendage in for analysis and determines that it's not human, but it's definitely some manner of hominid. And then, well, nothing. The story sort of dies off there. Maybe it's the problematic provenance of the purloined pointer, or that he knows that no one will ever believe his crazy-ass story, but Osmond just files the bones away to collect dust. It might have been lost for good if he hadn't donated his specimen collection to the Hunterian Museum at the Royal College of Surgeons when he died. In 2008, some poor intern was stuck sorting through the backlog of museum donations and came across the finger. Technology had advanced a bit since the late 50s, and DNA analysis of the finger showed, drumroll please, it actually was human. Oh, oops. Kind of anticlimactic, right? Well, that was the Brotherhood's plan. See, Osmond Hill was wrong about the finger, but right about the Yeti. They're a relict population of early hominids that are barely managing to cling to existence in the frozen hellscape of the Himalayas. They've got it bad enough without the whole damn world knowing they exist. Imagine the bragging rights a big game hunter would get for bagging the abominable snowman. The poor things would be hunted to extinction in no time. Fortunately, Byrne and Slick weren't as sneaky as they thought they were, and the Brotherhood's got no qualms about sifting through a celebrity's underwear. After intercepting the telegram exchange, the Brotherhood put an agent in place to snag the Stewart's luggage. They grabbed the finger, dummied up a replacement, and sent it to London with a slight delay, and no one the wiser. The original hand was left in place at the temple into the late 80s, when Unsolved Mysteries aired an episode about the Pung Bausch hand. At that point, the story was too big to risk leaving it laying out in the open, and a stealth team was dispatched to retrieve the relics, leaving the blame to fall on greedy tourists. Alright, kids, that's all you get for this month. I'm off to make history more interesting before I have to tell you guys all about it again.
I love 80s sci-fi and action movies. I love it so much, well, and horror movies too. I think it was a golden age of ridiculousness and amazingness. And Kung Fury, Laser Unicorns production company, has made a film called Kung Fury. It debuts this month. Kung Fury is something I have been excited about for so long now. I'm just hooked. It combines everything about 80s action movies into one thing, and it's fantastic. So you've probably seen things out on the social webs. David Hasselhoff did the song True Survivor. There's over 10 million views on YouTube on it. I'm not going to play that one because you've heard it by now. And the trailer as well is over... Let me see here. The trailer is almost 10 million views for that one too. So it's a huge thing. I'm super excited for them. But I got an early release of a song by Mitch Murder for Kung Fury. And I'm going to play that for you now. I contacted them and got permission. And I'm just really excited about it. So if I'm excited about it, you get to freaking hear about it. So here it is. Kung Fury by Mitch Murder.
I'm a cop, and damn good at my job. I would use my new super kung fu powers to fight crime. So I became the best damn cop in the world. I became Kung Fury.
Dead FM is directed by Don Early.
Contributors to Dead FM are Scott C. Brown, Andy Dabrowski, Christian Doyle, Chris Dupenthaler, Don Early, Brian Lewis, Jimmy McMichael, Tiffany Pike, Matt Vansel, Beau Pritchard, Emily Shimkus, and Matt Shimkus. Dead FM theme song High Road is written by Sean Bendixson, performed by the Bendixson Brothers, and arranged by Steve Wolbrecht. Dead FM is copyright 2015, Dead Gentlemen Productions, LLC, all rights reserved.
Don't forget to subscribe to Dead FM on iTunes, Stitcher, or however the hell else you get your podcasts. I'm a hound dog, don't you know?